Welcome again to The Journey Within. And if you weren't at the session on Tuesday, welcome for the first time. We're going to be talking a little bit about journey stories, the narrative arc of journey stories, and picking up where the last one left off. And I'm going to retread a little bit of ground, so if you're here on Tuesday, I apologize for just reminding you of some things that you probably already forgot, so should be okay. My name is Kai Carlson Wheat, and I'm up here as a poet. I teach creative writing as my main job in San Francisco, and it's fun to be up here in the village sharing this with y'all. I used to work here as a cook, and I was here for a year, did a stint in the kitchen, and this, you know, teaching faculty was just a different kind of strata or whatever in the village, and couldn't go to a lot of sessions because I was working a lot in the kitchen, so this is a different side of the village, and it's just interesting to be on these different realms. My brother Olaf is here from Oakland. He just got in today, and my dad Morris Wee is here. He works in the Hype House. He's the Hype House guy. Sorry to call you that, Dad.
Why? I think that's great.
No, it's a great title. It's just that guy. I don't know. So we talked the other day a little bit about journey structures, and this is an important concept to just understand because mythologically and religiously, in all stories, narrative arcs across time, you see the same structure involving journey stories. And the basic structure is that there's a protagonist who is called to quest, goes on a journey, encounters the unknown, and then returns home. To share what they learned with their community. That's what you always see in these stories. There are a number of other things that happen along the way. We're going to talk a little more about those today. But we talked a little bit about poetry's ability to turn and pivot. And often I think about the impetus to take a journey as that kind of turning point in one's life, something that sends you out and that marks a definitive change from one point in your life to the next. And I talked on Tuesday a little bit about how Holden operates as that kind of space in so many people's lives, transitional space between one point in your life and the next. Even if you're just here for a week or, you know, a couple years even, Holden operates in that kind of way. So one of the qualities of this is that the person going out often carries a wound with them. Sometimes it's in folk tales, it's a scar that they have. Sometimes it's a vulnerability that they have. But that's the thing that always gets tested when they have this encounter with the unknown. That's the piece of them that gets challenged and that then maybe turns from a weakness or turns from a vulnerability into a strength, and then is part of what is kind of taught to the community or given to the community as the person returns. So again, just a quick overview of that, but we talked a little bit about this arc last time. We're going to be focusing on the encounter with the unknown today, and mystery, and how that plays a role in poetry and creative writing in general. But I was raised as a pastor's kid. My dad is a longtime pastor, and I had a hard time with believing in God when I was young. I still have a hard time believing in God. And there was something about the routine of religion, the routine of coming in, sitting in the front pew every week, and having the whole congregation judge you as the pastor's kid, and that type of thing, having to pay attention to the sermon, just sort of the boring rigmarole of daily religious life that didn't inspire me. It didn't put me in contact with any sense of the divine. And I was pretty much an atheist for a long time, or at least the high school teenage years, kind of rebellious. Then I kind of transitioned into being more of an agnostic, you know, like, maybe there's something out there, maybe aliens exist, you know, who knows. But as I've gotten older, I found myself more and more coming into a space of a deep spirituality and a kind of faith in the unknown and the way that it orchestrates all of our lives. And you can call that God, or you can call that synchronicity, or you can call that any number of things. But part of the thing that alerted me to that, or that made me have more faith in that type of thing, that phenomenon, was the traveling that I've done and the journeying that I've done in my life. And, you know, being a kid stuck in Fargo, which I always give my dad a hard time about because I didn't have a good time in Fargo. I didn't have a sense for that kind of spiritual presence. But once I, you know, got out of the house and started traveling during college, and then outside of college, I spent some time hitchhiking and hopping trains. If you were at the film last night, you saw some of that. But those experiences, the more that I had them, the more I felt a presence outside of any explanation, outside of even human life, that seemed to be directing fate a little bit, that seemed to be aiding me at times or making things difficult at times, but it was unexplainable, and it has come to inform a lot of my poetry. And the book that I wrote that came out last year is a lot about the traveling on the surface, but there's a deeper kind of spiritual journey taking place that I'm still going through, and it's always an evolving thing. So, anyone else kind of have that experience with faith, religion, a version of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it. But yeah.
Yeah.
At Lutheran camp? Ooh.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Brave.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. But you understand what I'm saying with this. It's not an easy thing. And one of the places that I really found this, in addition to, you know, through traveling and circumstances like that, was in poetry. And I always find this feeling, this sense in poetry. And I think poetry is maybe allowed to explore the mystery a little bit more, because it doesn't really have to stake a claim in any creed or, you know, religious stance. You know, it's been a thing for me that has continuously refilled some vessel of faith that I'm always looking to fill. But I want us to look at this poem by Rumi again, just talk a little bit more about it.
Do you have a couple more?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, yeah, it's just on the back page here. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
on Tuesday we already looked at that poem a little bit. But what are people? What's the feeling that's evoked there? What's he trying to get at?
This something that's beyond judgment of right and wrong, just a standard set of rules or something bigger out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it unifies everything somehow. There's yeah. each other.
Right.
To be at our, go ahead. I was just saying, at our core, we have a soul connection with each other.
Right.
To me, it feels like being really in the moment,
mm-hmm.
and which suspends that kind of chatter and pretext of anything.
Yeah.
Freedom. Freedom of being in the moment.
Yeah.
It would seem to take you out of that front pew every Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah, getting out of the chapel.
I like the "I'll meet you there."
Mm-hmm.
There's a presumption that
right.
we're all allowed.
Right.
Wherever this is.
Right. That you in the poem could be a specific you, but it feels more like universal you, whoever you are. And that's one of the key things with these journey stories and the journeys that we're going on in our lives. It's not just that we go out and we have a personal experience and then we perform some heroic feat or whatever, and then come back to brag about it. There has to be an encounter, right? There has to be an engagement with the mystery or otherness or a stranger that we are not familiar with in order for that transformation to take place, in order for those ideas that tend to limit us and tend to limit our ability to empathize with other people on a kind of universal plane, for those to come down. And there has to be that encounter. So let's look at another poem real quick that involves an encounter like that. You might know this one, A Blessing by James Wright. People know this one. Okay. A Blessing. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture, where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white, her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly, I realize that if I step out of my body, I would break into blossom. A So we see in that poem this kind of encounter, right, with the unknown. There's, in the Rumi poem, it's abstract, right? Out beyond ideas, there's a field, I'll meet you there. Here we have a very concrete version of this, a very similar idea. How do we know that he's entering a field like that in this poem? What indicates that?
The barbed wire?
Yes, barbed wire. He has to cross over from the highway, which represents perhaps civilization, to the field where the ponies are standing. Crosses the barbed wire. And that has to happen in order for this encounter to take place with the unknown. So then what happens when he encounters the horses, the ponies?
He finds love. They come to him.
Yeah. They come to him. They accept him, right? And then at the end we see a transformation, or at least he feels that there's a kind of inner transformation taking place by this encounter. There's not much that happens in the poem. We don't even see him pull over to the side of the road, but maybe that happened. And him and a friend across the barbed wire fence encounter these ponies, and then he has this sort of revelation of feeling of the sublime or whatnot. Gonna read one more poem, and then I want us to do a little Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. Anyone know this poem? I one time heard Mary Oliver read this poem to an audience, and when she read the last line, there was an audible gasp. People knew the poem, but there was an audible gasp that rushed over the crowd and flew up to her reading it on stage, like a kind of cacophony of birdsong or something. It was very dramatic, but many Mary Oliver fans in this audience. Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. That's when we're supposed to get out of breath, have catharsis. But this is another take on this kind of idea, right? Beyond the borders between things, right? The allowance of releasing yourself of judgment.
I've always thought that's That's very profound, because from what little I know about Mary Oliver, she had a very traumatic childhood. Mm-hmm. She was sexually abused, and you know, I imagine releasing yourself of the burden of that was like a lifelong, you know,
right,
process and practice. And
right.
So, I mean, for her to write a poem about encountering the unknown must have been a little scary for her.
Right, you know? Right. I think it probably was, and encounters with the unknown are always scary. You know, there's always a risk and a fear. She says that she wrote this poem kind of all at once in one go, and just kind of flowed out of her when she wrote it. But you can feel that type of release in it. You know, you can feel that emotion that's been pent up for a long time, perhaps, that kind of just comes out in this ecstatic moment, or near ecstatic moment. But I love that idea of the family of things. No matter how lonely, you still belong. But again, this is sort of, this poem doesn't take place in a landscape, in time, the way that the James Wright poem did. This is more of an imaginative, ruminative journey that she's going on, she's exploring. So where do people encounter this kind of feeling in their lives? Where do you encounter this kind of mystery? Do you have moments where you step across the barbed wire and allow yourself time to commune with the pony somewhere?
Like if I'm going home and like usually on my bike, it's easier to putz. But if I don't know, I see something interesting in a park that I haven't checked out before, and I stop and just sit there and take it in. Most of the time it's really rewarding to break a routine for a little while and to see something different, I guess.
Yeah. Anyone else have times in their life when they allow themselves this kind of space?
Every time I get on a bus to come up to Holden, just entering another space that opens some things up.
Yeah. On the Amtrak coming up here?
Yeah.
You step off for a crew change or something, you can, you know, look at, you know, murals in Eugene or something for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the unexpected. I love it when something unexpected happens, mm-hmm. and that just is precious, so precious to me. And I don't know if it's because it's so fleeting that you just see something or feel something or have an interaction with someone that is so, that's what I like.
Yeah.
That's what sticks with me.
Well, and I think these moments can happen in everyday life, breaking a routine or whatever, but I think there's sort of a spirit around places where we struggle and challenges that we're meeting, where I think spirit sort of brings us to these places where we have to sort of discover a homing or a, you know, kind of confront who we are and whose we are and come face to face with our humanity, you know,
yeah.
And that we're sort of a part of a bigger picture.
Right.
So I think it's in those places too, where we're struggling or where we're hurting or challenged in some way.
Whenever I try to write a poem, seriously, that whole writing and all of that has not been my thing over the years that I felt comfortable at or very good at. So, but yet even the other night, when had us write, I had no clue what I was going to put down, and then by the end it was like, maybe the words weren't quite what I would have wanted, but it was like, wow, that was not, somebody said unexpected. That
mm-hmm.
was,
right.
It seems like each time I go to that spot, it's just unexpected. I've crossed something into an unknown area that I'm even sometimes fearful of. Or,
yeah.
And yet, something seems to come out of it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty powerful each time.
Yeah.
I think in encounters with wildlife,
yeah,
and I think I see a similarity in these three poems, is that the universe is so big and we are such a small speck in it,
right?
But yet, at the same time, not insignificant.
Right.
I think anytime I have an encounter with like little kids, mm-hmm. I don't even like little kids that much,
right.
but like they have such a different way of seeing the world, and it's like that like out of the mouth of babes thing where they have this tendency to make some like profound observation about the world, or that feels profound because you've lost sight of viewing the world from that particular lens.
Yeah.
And I think like any place that I go where I encounter a lot of kids and like interact with them, I always have that feeling of like I learned something new today.
Yeah, totally. Anyone seen the bear?
Yeah. I wish I would have.
Definitely an encounter. My dad told a story this morning about the bear coming into the cabin a little bit, you know, at the hike house, and sounded kind of scary or startling at least.
Yeah. Did you want me to say something
about that? No, I'm just in case you had, you wanted to elaborate on that, but yeah.
Was that recently?
That was last Sunday. Oh,
yeah. So that's pretty recent.
Yeah, pretty recent. Yeah, these things, these encounters sometimes are surprising, sometimes evoke some kind of fear, but they have a tendency to change us or to give us a different perspective, new eyes to see things with. I'm going to tell a little story. This isn't that dramatic of a story, but it just happened to me. And then I want us to go out and have a little adventure of our own into the village and do a little writing. But I was recently in Paris, and when I go to Paris, I like to get coffee, eat a pastry, probably a croissant, and go down to this little canal that I like in the 11th and smoke a cigarette and write poetry. And that's what I was doing this day, and I had this bag and my camera bag sitting right next to me. And this stranger came and he sat down next to me and started talking to me, you know, saying, where are you from, like, how you doing, and I didn't know who he was, so I was just partly ignoring him, and he said, do you want to buy some marijuana, you know, because he assumed that I had long hair, and I was like, no, not really, I'm from California, where it's completely legal, but thanks anyway, and he was like, oh, well, can I have a cigarette? And I said, sure, and so I shared it with him, and he walked off, and I thought that was a little odd, but I looked at my stuff and made sure it was still there, and it seemed fine, so I kept writing, and then he came back about a minute later, smoking the cigarette that I'd given him, and sat down again, and he said, hey, I wanted to come back because I also have some hashish, which is just, you know, concentrated marijuana, basically. And I was like, no, I'm not interested in it. And he pulled it out of his pocket and kind of showed it to me, sort of dramatically. And, kind of looked over at the hashish that he had, and I was kind of like, no, I'm not interested. Thanks anyway. And he said, oh, okay. And then he got up and left. And I looked over at my bags, and this bag was there, but my camera bag was gone.
And it happened in like 5 seconds. And I stood up and I immediately knew what had happened, that somebody had taken it and he was the distraction.
Oh,
and I looked around and there was a crowd. It wasn't too crowded, but there was a crowd and I couldn't tell who had done it. It could have been any one of them. And they maybe had it in a backpack, or they'd already gotten out somehow from my view, but I just couldn't tell who it was. And it almost seemed like magic. I was like, wait, did I have my camera with me? Like this, I didn't hear anyone behind me. Like there was no way. So went to the police department, filed a report, rather than trying to like get violent with this guy, because that wouldn't have gone anywhere. The cops, I think, were used to this type of thing in Paris, things getting stolen, so they were like, well, we'll give you a call.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, but it was pretty obvious I wasn't going to get it back. So spent the next few days going to camera stores, checking to see if someone had sold it. This is an old camera that is hard to find in working order, it's hard to replace. And couldn't find anything, looked online, trying to get one on eBay, and even that was just a little hard. Everything had a problem with it, every camera was being sold there. And so I was kind of bummed out, because I couldn't take pictures, and we were going to New York after this, and I love taking street photos in New York. It's one of my favorite things, and New York is so, there's so many people and it's so weird, the street photos are just like everywhere. But we get to New York, and I didn't have a camera, and I was really bummed out. And the first day, we were going to get ice cream at this place in Brooklyn called Van Leeuwen's, fancy hipster ice cream. And I see this guy in line with my old camera slung over his neck, and it was this camera.
Oh,
and
really?
It's an F3, Nikon F3 from 1980. And I see him with this camera hanging on his neck, and I was like, oh wow, that's cool, is that an F3? And he was like, yeah, Nikon F3, and I was like, how do you like it? And he was like, oh, I love this camera, but I'm selling it tomorrow at Adorama, because I'm traveling and it's a little too heavy for me to travel with right now. And I was like, huh, interesting, how's it working? And he was like, well, I just shot a photo spread for Vogue with it this week, so it should be working well. And I was like, huh, well, I was just in Paris and I just had a F3 stolen from me. Maybe I could just buy it off of you. And he was like, yeah, sure, why not? So I just bought it off him right there, Venmo'd him $300 for the camera, and he gave me an extra lens, he gave me this old case and a few other things. And I had my camera back, and I just went out in New York, started taking photos immediately, and it was all good. But this guy also is pretty cool, and now we're friends on Instagram, and liking each other's stuff and following each other. But it was one of those things where I had a situation that was really bad, and this encounter with this person in Paris kind of evoked that sort of fear, that sort of like unwillingness to want to trust somebody. And then I waited, you know, a few days actually, and somebody else just appeared out of nowhere with the exact camera I had lost, ready to sell it. And it's experiences like that that I've had traveling that kind of refill this vessel of faith that I'm trying to figure out in myself, and this idea. And you know, he wasn't an angel sent by God to give me a camera, but it was a pretty weird coincidence, you know. But anyway, I just wanted to share that story because it really just happened before I came to the village. And what I want us to do is go on a little field trip, okay? I want us to take our pieces of paper and a pen, and I want us to go out and try to dare ourselves to encounter the unknown in some way in the village. Maybe that's somebody that you haven't met before. Just walk up to them and say hi. Or just, you know, write about them from afar. That's okay, too. Maybe, you know, we'll take, let's see, maybe 20 minutes. Does that sound okay? Take 20 minutes to walk around, find some version of the unknown, whatever that represents that to you, and try to write a little bit about it. And dare yourself to kind of get into that that space a little bit, even if it is a little spooky. Even if it's down in the bare corridor.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And then we'll just reconvene here.
6:45.
Yep. Yeah, so maybe 6:50 we'll come back. 6:50.
Again,
6:50. Right. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of ways to explain this.
Yeah,
wow.
I like this.
Like you said that.
Yeah. Oh, Jenna, did you have your glasses case?
Writing is not my forte.
Yeah, well that's, I mean, I think it's everybody's forte. Everyone has access to it. It's just,
yeah.
You know, it's about giving yourself the space for things to come.
Okay. Thank you.
How are you doing? Did you have a good afternoon?
I was supposed to get back around three, and then it was hiking with other people, so you didn't get back till 5:30.
Some quiet time for you.
Safety in numbers, but
yeah,
it wasn't like you could text me. Not that I wanted to be texted anyway.
No, this is true. Texts.
Maybe a little flare.
We'll have to be back in soon. Yeah, a little flare, just so you didn't worry.
Right.
Yeah. It must have been stinking hot to hike, though. Yeah, honestly.
Well, think about it this way. If it's only in the 70s here, and we're used to 100 degree, 90 degree
yeah.
weather where we are, it's
That's
actually
true.
It's actually just hot.
Yeah. And you don't get the humidity.
Yeah, well, we don't get humidity down where we are either.
Oh, you don't?
No, it's dry.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately.
That's what kills me, is that humidity.
Oh, it's awful, yeah.
No, thank you. No, I suppose Reading, that would be, is it high in elevation? Did you say Reading?
No, we don't live in Reading. We're farther south. We're in Davis near Sacramento.
Okay.
Reading is even worse.
Oh, okay.
Reading is ungodly hot.
Mm. Yeah. Well, everybody thinks the Midwest is cold until they get there in the summertime and they discover the humidity and the heat.
Yeah, I've done that too.
Yeah, it's not fun. Did they have a good hike though? Was it? They hike up to the falls, or what did they do?
Well, he was. How did this go? He's hiking with three other people. I think they got up there somewhere, and then one decided to come back because he was supposed to meet some other family. And then the other two that he was hiking with decided they wanted to stay the night up at Holden Lake.
Oh. Okay.
So then Peter. Came back on his own, which is fine. And he said there was, I don't know, probably a good dozen or more people that were heading up there to all camp up there, eight of which were teenage boys. So he was thinking that
he made the right decision.
Well, he wasn't planning on camping anyway.
No.
But yeah.
But that would not have been a fun night.
No, no.
Well, he'll sleep tonight.
I would hope so. Yeah. He's a pretty strong hiker.
It's good.
And with his long legs, he can go fast and far.
Did you bring any quilting projects with you, or what did you do?
I did. I brought. I generally like just doing machine piecing and stuff, but I have taken on over the last couple of years, maybe English paper piecing, where you have little hexagons and then you fold the fabric over it and stitch it all by hand, and it's
wow.
It's kind of the equivalent of being able to knit on the go, but it's still I can get it all in a pretty compact thing.
I have you show me. I'm out tomorrow morning, so I probably won't be able to see what you're talking about, but it sounds amazing. What do they call it?
English paper piecing. Have you ever seen a quilt that's called Grandmother's Flower Garden, and it looks like a bunch of circles? Usually three, like one outer ring and then an inner ring and then a small ring, and they are all like blocked together on a white background or something. They're kind of very traditional, old-timey looking quilts. That's kind of...
No, I don't remember that.
What they are, but you can do all kinds of really cool things with them.
Fun.
It doesn't have to look old-fashioned unless you want it to.
Right. Although some of those older quilts are kind of fun. I go to the state fairs to see the quilts, because I love to see the contemporary ones and you know, kind of the hand-dyed and
mm-hmm.
hand-designed kind of quilts, and then the grandmas who bring their wedding ring and the, you know, all those really traditional designs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just fun to see.
I had a double wedding ring on my to-do list or bucket list or whatever, but I wanted a small one, so I only made four rings.
Mm-hmm.
And made it for a doll bed.
Oh.
So that my stuffed dog and stuffed rabbit and stuffed rat can have a blanket to stay warm in the winter.
There you go. I wasn't into it. I don't know. I did sew for a while, but I just have lost touch with all of that.
It comes and goes. Sometimes, well,
seasons.
Yeah. Kind of rolls in and out of popularity.
Yeah. I think, when I have a little more time, I'll probably come back to that. It's not so far down the road.
So where are you staying here?
I'm in Chalet 2.
Oh, okay. Well, we're up in 10, so possibly I could get stuff.
Yeah.
It's all very compact.
Well, if you want to, after Vespers?
Sure, or something.
Okay. I'd love to see your stuff. And tomorrow morning will be crazy because I've got a 9 o'clock up in the office, and then that'll be an hour or more, and then boom, bus.
Okay.
Out on the water, home. Though I wish I could stay a little longer. It's okay. I gotta get back. I've got a contract I gotta complete. Always working. So what congregation did you serve in Fargo?
I served a congregation in Moorhead.
Moorhead.
Called Shepherd.
Oh, good.
And my wife served First Lutheran in Fargo.
That's where, we were members of Bethlehem. It was so long ago. But anyway, so I went to before you.
But you went to church in Fargo.
No, so we lived as a family in Fargo for a
while.
So we moved to a
I'll stand out.
Are you? He was just back to the pathways for me.
Sit still and not busy or preoccupied with something. There's so many details happening around me that I just don't notice when I'm busy. I mean, there's people that are busy in their own ways, and also other people that are seeking rest. Yes, it's just kind of a different perspective when you don't have an objective, like goal, that you're engaged with.
Yeah.
This won't surprise anybody the way it starts. Should I read it?
Yeah, if you want to share it, it'd be great.
Bear at my door, why have you walked into my life? Are you the animal of my dark side, threatening to emerge? Or will you retire quietly as some form of reassurance that light will prevail? Dark, furry, fuzzy teddy? Or something wild and dangerous that I have not known. Go away. I don't want to risk it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That was great. And the bear did go away.
I said go away. So far.
Yeah.
I wrote what I've been wondering since I left the dock at Chilean. Yeah. Why do they come here, the young ones? Can their lives be so full of stuff, busyness, and chaos that they seek peace and a life alternative already? Breaking routines, they come with their younger ones. What do they do when they explore? Do they take turns leaving the routine? Can it be for them the first change of life? Reinvention before 30? What? This is what some of us seek now in our older age. Or maybe we've reinvented several times. Could this then change the direction of the world and where it seems to be going for their young? I wonder, can even the youngest ones be changed?
Yeah, some real questions there.
You know, and that's the unknown.
Right. And no cell phones here.
But yeah, you can't Google it. You can't Google an answer to that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Very expanding.
Yeah.
Enlightening.
Yeah. Anyone else try to engage with somebody or a group of people in the village that they don't know yet that represented the unknown to them? Yeah.
I have not written anything. Yeah, wondering about, I see all these sites which are familiar from Holden. Mm-hmm. I try to take a second look. And I see, there's so much behind it. I saw a squirrel just stopping right in front of me. So normally I probably would have, yeah, squirrel, I go on. But I stopped and wondered where would the squirrel go. It went right into a hole right in front of me. And I wondered about the unknown underground world that I don't know anything about, but which is very familiar to the squirrel. The same thing, and I walk behind the buildings. There are all these contraptions, old cars, debris, broken wood, and pipes sticking out of the ground, and I wonder, what is this for? Do I know anything about this village, really, in the technology? Why are these cars sitting there, and they have these tubings, and they go inside? What are they sucking out of the building? And it says, I don't have my glasses, so. Be careful, don't operate without talking to Janice or something, you know. Stop. Fire. That's forbidden ground. Okay. So I walk on. So there are all these things that don't make sense to me.
Yeah.
I walk around the building to May Street, and there is a familiar scene. It's the front door of the village. Everything looks pretty. And so, how am I going to face the unknown, you know, really, in this village, which seems familiar? And then this surprising thing happened. I'm very happy about it because I didn't have to think anymore. I could go into action. Okay, there was a plane had flown into the big spruce tree. Two of them, actually, and there were people desperately trying to rescue those planes. And I only saw this guy with a big stick, and I didn't know what he was fishing for. Normally, I probably would have just sat down and, like all the other people, wondering and musing and laughing and having fun. But no, so this time I stepped a little bit further. I helped the guy, and he had this huge stick, which was very heavy for one guy to hold. So I helped him hold this, and so the two of us, we were shaking the tree down, and the needles fell and everything, but the planes did not come down. But with persistence and other people cheering on, we got them both down.
Covered a lot of territory in 20 minutes. Yes.
Yes, dirty hands, I tell you.
That's great.
I saw Hair Death.
Oh, you are?
Playing with a tree. And I wrote a short haiku.
Oh, cool.
About that. I wrote, erratic airplanes, they beat the tree with a stick, the tree laughs, playing. Because Herta was having a really good time,
yeah.
But I thought the tree might be having a good
time
too.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
Or maybe not.
Oh, maybe not, I don't know.
Probably was.
My wife and I were camped out at Image Lake. And so we're talking about a little bit of the unknown in nature and wildlife and creation. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this. High on a knoll, wildflowers straining for their thirst of sunlight, purple, yellow, white, blue, surviving beneath the earth until the rain from the sky brings their due. The last drops of sunlight reflecting on the water, the rising of the waning moon, black-tailed deer searching for food, mountain hemlock, white bark pine, subalpine fir, hoping for another year. Glacier Peak, Copper Peak, Bonanza Mountain, keep an eye on the valley below. Is this the end or just the beginning? Mm.
Nice. Well, the descriptions, there's a lot of internal rhyme in there too. I noticed it's really good. Well done. Moon and. What was moon rhyme?
Blue, I think. Yeah.
Slant rhyme.
Food.
Yeah. Beautiful. Anyone else want to share?
I will, since I'm scared to share.
In front of the notes, guys.
I was like, I need to write a note, and I will go back to my room and write about
it. And I did.
So, that actually is more funny in the end. But anyways, it's in there. In that space I moved in and out of so quickly. Colors and shapes, textiles and machines, and people who know. I know nothing but what I saw, and I liked it. And I go, fear pawing at me. It's too late, it's on my face. Hi, can I help you? Echoes child and adult. My uncertainty expressed is met with kindness. Startled out of the darkness comes darkness to my question. What do? You weave it. Can I leave now? Can I go? My ignorance exposed, I shrink. Where can I hide? Kindness takes over again. I'm standing taller. My shoulders ease, hope is back. Kindness appears in a second voice and shows me the way. I'm relaxed now, smiling, laughing even. I'm signed up. I hope she likes it. The fear is gone.
Nice.
That'd be that weaving room.
That's great.
There we really felt that encounter, you know, that challenge. Anyone else want to share?
I'll share mine. I was trying to sort of, I guess, concentrate on just capturing a snapshot in a little bit of an unexpected way. So this is my unexpected snapshot. Out the door and down the hallway, not yet traveled to a door not yet opened. Discovering treasures made by tiny hands with bold imaginations. As the sounds of the village catch on the evening breeze, sending songs to the top of cedar trees. So many wonders, unexplored, if only to listen and to see.
Nice.
And what I discovered is in the back by the craft is all these little crazy animals that the kids had made and put in a little circle.
Yeah.
And I had never been to the back of that building, and I just was so charmed by, especially the hedgehog.
What did they make the animals out of? Clay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen any of this.
Yeah, so it's back there. I'm just saying, unexpected snapshot.
I love the hedgehog.
All right, I'll fight you.
If it disappears, we know who.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, I'll read mine.
All right.
And to me, the biggest unknown is in the building next door. So I call this the thread. In the beginning, I took you in like pablum, spoon-fed, thick, sloppy dribbles down my chin. What a mess. Jim and Tammy Faye and all their kind, you had a big problem, a bigger mess. The hoo-ha roared around me, closing my ears and my mind. You were a disappointing letdown. A friend said, go to Holden. The mountains called, hoo-ha everywhere. Hoo-ha everywhere? Karen and Dan, Mary and John, Nyla and Larry, community. Inclusive language, open communion, gospel-based preaching, garbology, dessert once a week, care for the earth, concern for Namibia and South Africa. Certainly still a mess. I glimpse the thread. Slowly I grab it and am pulled until I unravel. The less I believe, the greater my faith.
Anyone else?
Last line.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Looking at the hedgehog. You're right, Dad.
Anyone else write about faith explicitly, their faith? As the unknown? Anyone else want to share what they wrote? Or you could just say what you wrote about if you don't want to share your writing.
I'll share in solidarity with me.
All right.
We're afraid to share because I am too. Okay. Inquiry into an unexplored space. Narrow door. It's unlocked. Flowers and plants from the past, pots and crates, lampshade and wire hangers. Unsteady screams. Will I slide off the roof if I get too close? A flashing yard light. Here? How long has it been sitting here? How long can it keep flashing? Look outside. People. Will they see me? Is this place forbidden now? Banged up tin roof, rust in the drains, an architectural feature that looks like the head of an eagle. Or is it my friend the mourning dove? Back inside, pottery, made by anyone I know, faded memories. Look up, a second story. Didn't know that was there. How does one get up there? Pruning clippers. Well, I can escape with the blade if it comes to that. How long have these plants been dead? 30 years or just last year? Two big granite rocks. No, three. Do they miss the other ones in the creek? Plates. Is this from when the winter staff in Koinonia ate in Koinonia Creekside? A blood red cross made of branches. I'll stop here. Exit left.
That's a lot of imagery.
Yeah. It's just amazing how much you can observe and how much metaphoric potential you can pull out when you just sit and pay attention and challenge yourself for 20 minutes.
I was trying to write as fast as I was seeing. It was tough just to keep up.
Well, it is hard. I mean, in our daily lives, we've programmed and we've been programmed by society to edit out so much of our sensory input, so much of our communion with anything resembling spirituality. And it's when people talk about poetry, sometimes they feel like it's a hobby or it's something that you do casually when you got a free afternoon or something. But I've found that to really get into the essential language and the essential questions that we're trying to ask in writing, it's not an easy thing. You have to push yourself to be in that space and force yourself there and force yourself to really, or dare yourself really, to look at some of these difficult things that are otherwise sort of fearful. It's a good practice, and I hope that this was kind of at least exciting a little bit, going out and challenging yourself to see something new.
Hi.
Yeah.
Did you write them?
Did I? Yeah, I did, but it wasn't the way I wanted it to be yet. I'll read it next time. So I'm going to read this poem, Let Evening Come, by Jane Kenyon, which actually your poem kind of reminded me of a little bit. This is a poem that is a litany and it's sort of a set of images, but you really feel her releasing herself, or turning herself over, her awareness over to a higher power. And if you know anything about Jane Kenyon, you know that she died of leukemia when she was in her 40s, I think. But she's grappling with that a little bit in the background of this poem. Let evening come. Let the light of late afternoon shine through chinks in the barn, moving up the bales as the sun moves down. Let the cricket take up chafing as a woman takes up her needles and her yarn. Let evening come. Let dew collect on the hoe abandoned in long grass. Let the stars appear and the moon disclose her silver horn. Let the fox go back to its sandy den. Let the wind die down. Let the shed go black inside. Let evening come. To the bottle in the ditch, to the scoop in the oats, to air in the lung, let evening come. Let it come as it will, and don't be afraid. God does not leave us comfortless, so let evening come. Beautiful poem, and a little bit harder when you know about her autobiography a little bit and what she was going through. But a hard poem to write, and you could read that poem as a kind of trivial sort of lullaby, but And a lot of, I feel like poetry sort of gets sidelined into those kind of categories these days. But often poets are dealing with forces and ideas and thoughts a lot larger than themselves, and trying to the best of their abilities to put some of that into words. And it's not always easy, but if you challenge yourself to encounter some of those things in your life that cause you fear, cause you to be uneasy, I've found that the poems get better and the language gets richer and the music gets stronger and more real as we hear them. But I want to give you some homework for next time, for tomorrow. If that's okay, I know that we're not in school at Holden, but what I want you to try to do is write about this experience with the unknown, this encountering of the unknown for the encountering of the other, not from your perspective, but from the perspective of the other, or whatever that unknown force was to you. I want you to try to flip that. And we talked on Tuesday about this Tolstoy quote, and I'll write it on the board again because some of you weren't here. But Tolstoy said that all great literature is one of two stories. A person goes on a journey, or a stranger comes to town. We talked a little bit about this already. We're going to talk more about it on Friday and talk more about the communal aspect of writing or telling our personal stories. But this exercise that we just did, you could see as a person going on a journey. And I want to challenge you to write it from the other perspective, as if you were the stranger, kind of coming into the unknown, right? Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, I think that's all that I had planned for today. It's 7:15, so I don't want to keep you too long before Vespers. But thank you all for being here and for sharing work and for being brave enough to kind of go through a little bit of this process. I know it's not always easy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.